Good morning, and may be seated. First case on our calendar, 07195, Cummins Property Services versus Worthington City Schools. Mr. Rich.
May it please the court, Jeffrey Rich, attorney for the Worthington City Schools. Yesterday morning when I was here, I talked to you about whether or not the smell test for a particular case was passed muster. And this morning we're going to talk about what happens not only with the sale, but whether what happened after the sale and before the tax lien date passes that smell test. The results, however, for both are the same, and that is the sale cannot be used to value the property. We refer you to our proposition of law number one. The sale price of real property cannot be considered to be its true value in Monday under revised code 571303 if the property was improved after the sale date and before the tax lien date. Once the evidence shows that the property was improved following the sale, the property owner must prove what condition the property was in on the lien day and prove that the new improvements did not cause the true value of the property to be different than the sale price upon which the owner relies as evidence of true value of the property. The facts in this case are as follows. On August 21st, 2002, the owner of this property purchased it from the U.S. Bank Association, which was the successor to Star Bank, for $385,000. The deed restrictions on the property at the time said that it couldn't be used for a bank or an ATM for the next 15 years. The owner then took out building permits. I believe he was going to redecorate it and make it for his wife's dental practice, but he had to remove 20 to 25% of the building, which was the vault, in order to make it effective. The owner then filed a complaint at the Board of Revision for tax year 2003, asking that the auditor's $530,000 value for the property be reduced to the sale price of $385,000. When the Board of Revision refused to reduce the value, the owner appealed to the Board of Tax Appeals. At the Board of Tax Appeals, the owner for the first time appeared and testified, but relied solely on the August 2002 sale. An appraisal was not submitted. Now, improvements were unquestionably made after the purchase of the property, but before the sale date. Here is the line of questioning from transcript pages 49 and 50. The question to the owner was the vault taken out prior to January 1st, 2003? The answer, it would have been right before or right after. I cannot testify under oath either way. But it's real close, either right before or right after. Our position is that once the owner testified that the property had been changed from the time they purchased it until the time of the tax lien date, and it was not in the same condition as it was at the time of purchase, that the burden to prove what condition it was in fell squarely upon the owner of the property. Now, the Board of Tax Appeals didn't agree with us in that regard, and they did not keep the burden of proof upon the owner to show what the property's condition was. Rather, they placed it upon the auditor and the school board. As they said in their decision, the Board of Education argues that the property underwent significant changes before the sale date. Between the sale date and the tax lien date. The evidence shows that a building permit was taken out by the appellant after the purchase of the property. However, there is no reliable evidence of the extent of the change to the subject property as of the lien date. Well, that's false. I just read you the testimony that showed that there was reliable evidence from the owner that the property had changed. BTA goes on to say, Mr. Cummins testified the bank vault was removed from the property, thereby increasing the square footage of the building by 20 to 25% either shortly before or after the tax lien date. There is no reliable evidence in the record to definitively establish when the change took place. There is no evidence in the record as to when any other modifications to the building were accomplished and at what cost. Moreover, the Board of Education did not demonstrate what the effect of any of these changes would have been on the value of the subject property as of the tax lien date. Obviously, that places an unreasonable and unlawful burden upon the Board of Education in this matter. We didn't have a duty to show any of those things. Our only issue was to cast doubt on the sale and to require the owner to prove what was the condition of the property on the tax lien date. A property owner who wants to rely on 571303 must prove that, first, they fall within the statute, and because they have exclusive knowledge of the facts concerning the sale and the condition of the property, they have the burden to show what condition the property was in. Any presumptions that apply under 571303 are rebutted when the owner testifies that constructions of new improvements began after the sale but prior to the lien day. That's why I said this doesn't pass the smell test from the date of sale to the tax lien day. The using the sale violates also, in this case, the uniform rule under Article 12, Section 2 of the Ohio Constitution, which requires the owner to prove what condition the property was in the lien day. Furthermore, the burden is on the property owner and not the Board of Education, as the BTA held in its decision, to prove what effect any of these changes would have had on the value of the property. And this is consistent with your recent reading of the St. Bernard case. We rely also on the deed restrictions that were in the property. Again, we think the owner had a burden to show us what, if any, effect those deed restrictions had, and we rely on the Muirfield case, which, by the way, the BTA cited in support of its decision, and we believe is exactly contrary to its decision, because the BTA held that the Muirfield case applied. But because less than fee simple unencumbered was acquired by the owner, the sale price cannot reflect the true value of the property, and the uniform rule requirements of Article 12, Section 2 of the Ohio Constitution apply. The county auditor cannot be required to value all property in Franklin County based on fee simple unencumbered, and yet allow this property to be based on something less than fee simple unencumbered. So we believe it's clearly unreasonable and unlawful, this decision. We ask you to reverse it and remand it and order that the value of the auditor for 2003, $530,000, be placed upon the property. We will reserve the rest of our time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Rich. Mr. Petkovich.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and Justice of the Supreme Court. Let me tell you what this property is. In essence, it's a small office building located on Lazelle Road to the east of State Route 23 and north of 270 on the edge of Worthington. This was a bank building, and the testimony before the Board of Tax Appeals indicates that my client was aware of this building for some period of time. His wife had a medical practice. She was an OBGYN and not a dentist, I believe, as Mr. Rich referred to. Her lease was coming due on the office space that she had. This building had been on the market for several years. We don't know for sure. It was 3 or 4 years after the bank vacated it. It was 3,000 square foot of a somewhat round-shaped building. Immediately to the east of it is a nursing home complex, and immediately to the west is a Wendy's that fronts Route 23. He purchased this property 4 months and 8 or 10 days prior to the tax lien date for $385,000, and that's unassailable. The only evidence that the Board of Education introduced at the Board of Tax Appeals was a copy of the deed, which had the auditor's notation that the property transferred for $385,000. Now, the Board of Tax Appeals
specifically— Was this a straight-up sale? There was no financing arrangements, no other, it was just an arm's length transaction.
Just Lanziger, the parties were unrelated, and I would note in the opinion you wrote in or authored for the court, I believe you indicated what the indicia of an arm's length sale is in Strongsville Board of Education versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision, and that would have been an opinion in January 17th of this year. The court indicated an arm's length transaction possesses three primary characteristics. It is voluntary without compulsion or duress. It generally takes place in the open market, and parties act in their own self-interest. In this particular case, the property was listed by the bank with a broker. Mr. Cummings testified that he got a hold of his broker, who negotiated with the bank's broker. They arrived at the sale price, and he purchased the property. Now, the interesting thing to note is the findings of the Board of Tax Appeals indicate that there was sufficient evidence adduced by the taxpayer with regard to this arm's length transaction. In addition, the Board of Tax Appeals found at page 8 of their decision that the Board of Education did not maintain its burden of proof in assailing the efficacy of the sale price as best evidence pursuant to 571303 in this particular instance. claims were made that there was some type of change. In essence, what happened was when they bought the building, there was a vault in the middle of it. The vault took up, the testimony that Mr. Cummings stated, took up 20 to 25% of the building. It made it unsuitable for an OBGYN practice. They tore it out. That's not an improvement. That's removing something that obstructs the business purpose for which you purchased the property. So all the indicia of an arm's length transaction are apparent here. Now this court, and Mr. Ritz talks about there was a limited warranty deed and there was a restriction on the use of the bank. This property had remained vacant and unsold for 3.5 to 4 years. We're not exactly sure how long that brokerage had it listed, but my client was aware of it for that period of time, at least 3 or 4 years, and it was on the open market and unsold. They had a business use for this little 3,000 square foot kind of circular building, and that was the purchase price that was negotiated and paid. In two recent decisions of this court, first of all, the keynote case, I think, in this particular instance, would be the Supreme Court's decision in Berea versus Board of Education, which is 106 Ohio State, 3rd, 269. In that particular instance, this court stated that pursuant to statute 5713.03 and pursuant to the line of holdings of this court over a vast period of years, that the best evidence, we didn't say perfect evidence, we didn't say ultimate evidence, we didn't say in a perfect world, the best evidence of the fair market value of a piece of real estate is what somebody paid for it in an arm's length transaction. Admittedly, all of the indicia of an arm's length transaction are apparent here. Number two, there was a sale price that was established. There is no dispute with regard to what the sale price was. This property is assessed at $530,000. It was purchased for $385,000.
Counsel, would you say that the real issue here is whether the removal of that vault is an improvement that would have to be taken into consideration under 5713.03?
First of all, I would say not, and here's why. There's very few commercial or even residential properties that are purchased that some change isn't affected in that property. If there's a big island in the kitchen and somebody's wife doesn't like it when they buy the house, it's removed. If you're taking something that you consider an obstruction or unnecessary, I don't consider that the type of improvement that would merit denying the efficacy of the sale.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying that removal of the vault is not an improvement that would elevate the purchase, but would you agree that the crux of the question is that if there is an improvement here, that that's an exception to the arm's length purchase price sale price as the determiner of the value of the property for tax purposes?
Well, Justice, can I give you a bifurcated answer? First of all, I wouldn't perceive that to be the kind of situation that would militate against the use of the sale as evidence. Number two, if in fact that were a type of situation that would militate against the sale, the court need only look at Lakota Board of Education versus Butler County Board of Revision, which is a determination of this court on March the 22nd of 2006. And in that particular instance, this court held that the Board of Education, with regard to the issue of a sale, had an affirmative burden of proof if they were going to contest the efficacy of a sale as the best evidence. So in answer to your question, if that were the rule, then it would be incumbent on the school board to prove how that would militate against the use of the sale as best evidence. And that's been established law. This court has indicated at least 47 years ago in Hercules Galleon Products versus Bowers, 171 Ohio State 176, that this court doesn't sit as a super board of tax appeals. This school board had two opportunities, two hearings, one at the county level, one at the Board of Tax Appeals, to come in with some kind of evidence. Now they're imposing some change in this burden of proof or the burden of persuasion of going forward, and one need only look at the two specifications or to two propositions of law the council read to this court. The property owner must prove. Well, once this court has already indicated in numerous decisions, the latest being January 17th of this year,
that once you have evidence of a recent arm's-length transaction, it's incumbent on somebody denying that to come forward with some evidence. And in this particular instance, the two propositions of law, one of them says, well, once the evidence shows the property was improved following a sale, now you got to come in and prove something else. And then the second proposition of law says, the sale of the property was subject to a deed and use restriction. I would respectfully submit to this court that there are very few residential, commercial, or industrial properties sold anywhere within the confines of the state of Ohio that are not subject to some form of deed or use restrictions.
Then, counsel, back to my question. In this particular case, you're stating that we don't have to determine whether the removal of the bank vault is an improvement because that burden was not yours. It was on the school board to bring forth, and there's no evidence that they, other than the removal of the vault, and they're using that as a basis for the improved sale, or I mean improved price.
Precisely, Madam Justice. You know, if you have a valuation of the county auditor at $530,000, you buy the building for $385,000, you take out a $50,000 building permit, if that's what it is for, we don't know what they spent. I don't know. There wasn't any evidence that we didn't have to broach that subject. How do you justify putting that on for $530,000? And whose burden of persuasion is it? Is it the taxpayer's burden of persuasion?
Well, shouldn't it be yours? You're appealing.
I was appealing, yes. And this court has held repeatedly that once you have evidence of a recent arm's-length transaction, there is no necessity nor efficacy to having an appraisal report.
Why would
the purchaser have to have an appraisal report on the purchase price pursuant to an arm's-length transaction?
Let me suggest that perhaps the accurate valuation is somewhere in between. Your client bought the building planning a specific use different than the use that the building had been put to previously. That use and that plan, as you indicated, included tearing out the vault to free up a quarter or so of the space in the building. If the vault was in fact out before the tax lien date, wouldn't the cost of that improvement, that is the cost of removal, that's something your client planned on all along, spending the money. If it was $50,000 to take it out, that was a planned expenditure, that was a planned investment in the building, and presumably your client, when they paid $300,000 for it or whatever it was, thought that with the vault out, it's worth $350,000 to your client. So wouldn't it be a legitimate question as to whether or not the vault was gone, whether that improvement was in place before the tax lien date?
Modern records.
And if it was, wouldn't, you know, once that's pointed out, wouldn't it be the burden of the appealing party to put on some evidence, at least as to the cost of that? I'm not suggesting under this unusual fact pattern that you need to go out and pay $5,000 to an appraiser.
Well, in essence,
but
that's what it would require.
But you could have had your client say, the ABC Wrecking and Removal Company has charged us $50,000 to haul that safe out of here, or vault.
Well, I'd be inclined to believe it was a great deal less than $50,000.
We weren't whatever it was.
That
was something that that the appealing party, your client, had personal knowledge of and could have put it on without a great deal of expense in professional appraisal advice.
Well, I understand, but if this court were to rule in accord with these so-called propositions of law, let's look at the logical alternative to that. First of all, school boards and Mr. Rich's firm file thousands and thousands of complaints every year in the various counties.
We know what they do.
Okay.
And they're, and whether we like it or not, they're entitled to do that.
Well, the vast bulk of those, Justice Pfeiffer, involve walking into a hearing with a real estate conveyance form saying this person purchased this property for this amount of money, we want the value increased to that amount.
We understand
now,
that.
If we were to use this and take a logical extrapolation from these two, what I think are frivolous propositions of law, wouldn't the Board of Education have to prove the very same thing in every one of these cases? Wouldn't they have to prove the there was no improvement, it's in exactly the same condition as when these people bought it, and there aren't any restrictions, and if there are, what's the force and effect of those in terms of dollars? Isn't that the logical conclusion of this? Or is the obverse side of the coin to be applied to a school board, but only a taxpayer?
Doesn't the appealing party have the burden of putting on the evidence, whoever that is?
Yeah, and the evidence was put on. The owner of the property came in and testified. The documentary evidence from the county was part of the statutory transcript. The sale documents were part of the statutory transcript. The county auditor's records evidencing the sale for $385,000. Official public documents were part of the statutory transcript. In addition, like I said, we had the testimony of the owner that it was arm's length. He wasn't related to the bank, and there was a negotiated price between his broker and the other broker.
Well, let's change the fact pattern a little. Your client buys a piece of ground, puts up these quickie storage things. They don't take very long to put up. They buy the ground in February, and by July, the storage things are up, and the tax lien date is the end of the year. You wouldn't argue that you could just sit back and say, well, we bought the land for $300,000. Never mind what went on that has us with a new building fully rented.
Well, Justice, the mechanism in Ohio tax law is the county auditor is supposed to value the partial construction as of the tax lien date. So, and I can recall one case I had before this court. It was Green Circle Growers, and what they did was they put up metal hoops with double air visqueen and blew hot air through it and raised plants. And then when the weather got warm enough, they took all this stuff down, and the county assessed those hoops and the visqueen as real property, as buildings, even though they went to a warehouse. And this court
declared
declared that those are real estate, taxable as real estate, as of January 1, because they were there on January 1.
You're going to need to sum up, Mr. Petrovic.
No, in essence, what we have here is the school board in this particular appeal is trying to shift this burden of proof that's mandated by this court and create a situation where now it's incumbent on only the taxpayer to prove something that's not incumbent on the Board of Board of Education to prove. And what you have here is something that flies in the face of established law in this state, as indicated in the Berea decision. At least it's been settled for 20 years.
Before you sit down, so you would argue that where you have a sale close in time to the tax lien date, if something else has happened that the party that's opposing you, in other words, you appealed, and your case is, here's what we paid, and that's your case, and so your argument is, if the school district thinks that something we did out there changed that value between when we bought it and the tax lien date, the burden should be on them to show how that changed it.
Well, that certainly appears to be the established law in this state. If we look at all the Board of Revision cases that this court has decided, at least in the 37 years that I've been involved in this area of law, it would seem to me that that would be the prerequisite to challenging that, as opposed to just creating this court into a super board of tax appeals and having another flood of merit appeals from the Board of Tax Appeals just because you don't like the outcome of the decision.
You've used your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rich, you've saved a little more than 8 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Justice, Rich, before you get started
ma'am.
There, how did the Board of Education or the auditor come up with the value for this property?
You'd have to ask the auditor that. I assume they went through their normal mass appraisal process and came up with the value of the property.
So there's no evidence on the record to indicate how they, I mean, there's several ways of coming up with the value of the property. Would you not agree?
Yes, it's in the property record card of the auditor is in the transcript, and it shows how they did it. They usually use a cost approach.
That wasn't what they utilized, was it?
They usually use a cost approach, I think. I mean, the mass appraisal systems will look at sales, they'll look at costs, things like that. So, but the questions that both you, Justice O'Connor, and Justice Pfeiffer asked, I think, got right to the heart of the issue here. And I think my my adversary forgot some very important cases on burden of proof that you have decided that do require the owner in these types of cases to offer the burden when it's in their ability to do so, the Knowlton case, and then 2 months ago, the St. Bernard case. In those cases where things appeared not quite right in the sales, you said the owner is the one who has to prove them because the owner is the one who has that knowledge, and you just don't accept willy-nilly one of these decisions. And of course,
well, counsel, here's the dilemma, though. They did put on proof of the transaction price, close in time tax lien date. So ordinarily that would carry the day.
Absolutely, and we wouldn't be here if that was the end.
So when you raise, well, hey, they did something out there. Does that and they don't respond to it, and we have to figure out who we think the burden is. But does that mean if you just say, hey, they when did you take the vault out of there, which is apparently all you said. Once you raise that question, does that mean now they just lose? Or you flip over to a number that doesn't apparently bear any real relationship to the true value of the property?
Well, they could very easily without.
We know what they could have done, but they didn't. So the case is here in this form. So is that by you asking one question, does it flip back to a number?
It's always with them. They filed the complaint about their sale. They have to prove the property's the same on the tax lien date. And as soon as they said it's not the same, all they had to do was bring in, here's the construction draws, here's our contract, here's our AIA certificate of draws. His suggestion was maybe 50,000. Show you put in 50,000 into the project. That happens all the time at boards of revision.
They didn't. So does that mean
that means they lose. That means they should have left the value as it was because they did not sustain their burden of proof. And the main reason we're here today is because of this burden of proof issue that the BTA in this decision, as I read it to you, said things that were absolutely unreasonable and unlawful.
So
the burden of proof cannot be on us.
So the value would go from 380 to 540 based on the failure to prove some improvement?
The value would stay where it was at, which was 530 or 540. The value would stay there because they hadn't sustained their burden of proof.
So you're saying that the vault, the failure to prove what the vault did in terms of improvement, I guess I'm having a hard time following your burden of proof argument. They came in, they established the sale price, which we are pretty clear now our law is arm's length, that's where you start. Why shouldn't then this vault thing either add or decrease the sale price, not make it flip back to the 540? That just doesn't make any logical sense considering where our law is going.
Well, I think that if there is no other evidence, and there wasn't, because they didn't submit their contracts, their certificates of draws, and these things, we've always held that if the owner or the person who pursues the case can't prove they're justifying a change and what the change ought to be or what the condition of the property was on the lien date, it goes back to the original value that the auditor had because it's the only appraisal evidence.
I have a hard time understanding why, if they've come in with arm's length transaction close in time, that they should have a burden of proof then also to refute anything that you've challenged. Why isn't it your burden of proof to say, okay, you did something extra that added to the 380 value, now it's like really 420 or 450. I mean, that seems a logical consequence of your challenging then their prima facie evidence of arm's length transaction. It's like you're saying, it's like Justice Pfeiffer said, you raise one question and all of a sudden they have another whole burden of proof that I don't really see in our law.
It's not another whole burden of proof, it's the same burden of proof they had in the beginning. What was that property's value on January 1, 2003? That's what the complaint was about. The sale is evidence if there was no change. What happens if it would have been farmland valued at $2,000 an acre, and then they got it rezoned for $50,000 an acre?
It's prima facie evidence. When that happens, when somebody meets their burden of proof on prima facie evidence, the burden shifts. That's common, ordinary law. They proved sales length, burden shift. Why doesn't it shift to you?
It shifted back to them as soon as they testified that we changed the property. The property wasn't the same. We questioned them. They said, we changed it. We did something to it. Now the burden's back on them. What'd you do to it? It's not the sale price. This would
Mr.
be the
Rich.
Only property in Franklin County that would be valued differently on lien day than it was supposed to be valued.
Mr. Rich, if you look at 571303, and I know your propositions refer to that statute, it almost seems as though you're asking us to modify the way the statute is currently written, which tells us the auditor has the determination of the valuation of property. It also tells us that the arm's length transaction is the presumption. That's in the first paragraph. It then says that the sale price shall not be considered the true value if, and two particular sections, A, that the estate loses value, or B, there is an improvement. And it seems to me that if we're talking the presumption is sale price, which has been submitted by the buyer has the sale price in the record, the auditor has evidence of it as well. The party who would be asking for a reduction would have the burden, being the owner most likely, but the party asking for an increase in the property against the presumption would also have the burden, which in that case would be the Board of Education. I don't see how your suggestion follows the way the statute is currently structured.
Well, the suggestion that I have made is consistent with the statute, because the statute says you consider the sale price unless there's been a diminution in value or an increase in value because of either removal or an addition. It's still the burden is on the person who filed under 571303. They have to satisfy that before any burden shifts. This is a very simple case. All they would have had to do is bring in the information that they had solely in their possession about what we changed. It happens all the time.
If the buyer has presented evidence of the arm's length sale, which under Berea we say is a presumption of the true value, it seems to me that the buyer has satisfied the burden. If you want to increase the value of the property, it would be your burden then to show that there are improvements and what that appraised value would be.
That is not our position, Your Honor.
Okay.
Our position is he who seeks to abide by 571303 must satisfy it. If there's been a change in that property, it's up to them to show the value of that change. Not up to someone who doesn't have any knowledge about it, but up to the person who owns the property, who has all the documents and all the information.
Mr. Rich, sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander. As your opponent pointed out, generally you're in the opposite position. You come in and file these cases saying, hey, they just paid a whole bunch more money. And under your argument, the landowner could sit there after you offer the sale price and say, didn't we change the property?
And if they did, we dismiss the complaint, Your Honor.
And you'd say, yes. And they say, okay, so how much did that, you know, you've got to prove how much, that means this is out the window. And
absolutely.
And you have to prove how much that improved or devalued the property.
If the owner comes in, as they do on many occasions, not a lot, but on many, and say something has happened, like it's been rezoned, we've added a building to it, we will generally withdraw the complaint because the sale price is not the value of the property. Had it gone the other direction in this, we wouldn't even be here as soon as we saw a major improvement on the property, because it's not, the sale price is not the value of that property. And as for the Berea case had to do with market rents and an appraiser coming in to try to value them, not these types of things. I see my time is up, Your Honor. Thank you very much. We would suggest that this is an unreasonable and unlawful decision. It should be reversed.
Mr. Rich,
I'm sorry.
Before you sit down, we've been arguing the matters of law here, but as a practical effect of whatever we decide, what does that amount to in terms of tax revenue in this particular case?
Tax revenue? I'm not sure. I'd have to look at my file, Your Honor.
You don't know what the tax revenue in this case would be? That's
how much it is? Several thousand dollars, probably. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rich. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.